Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gant, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next hour and a half, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, a number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can also chat with me at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. You can also send email messages to the show at goforit.gant@gmail.com. That's goforit.gant@gmail.com. Expected to be joined by 13-year veteran and former Eagles offensive lineman Trey Thomas. Trey will come on and talk about that amazing game that transpired at the Meadowlands this past week. If you missed it, then you missed something big and you missed something great. And also expected to be joined by former Chiefs and former Jets kicker Nick Lowry. And Nick will talk about his career and also he'll actually talk a little bit about that game. So you don't want to miss Nick Lowry or Trey Thomas or this show tonight. So make sure you go to blogtalkradio.com/pgant. Jeremy?
Paulie?
How are you?
Man. Doing great. You know, maybe I'm going to call you out sometime during this show, just start ranting and raving, and I expect you to take it, and I expect you to give me some answers.
Maybe I can, maybe I will. But, of course, we have to start at the Meadowlands. Where
what'd you think of that, Paul?
A crazy afternoon at the Meadowlands. And if you look at that particular football game, I mean, 31 was 24-3 at one point. Then it got to 31-10, and it was 31-10 with 7.5 minutes to go. From there, Michael Vick and the Eagles pulled off an amazing comeback. It started with 65 yards to Brett Celek. Onside kick recovered by Riley Cooper. Michael Vick runs it in from there, from not too far out. And then the lead is now 31-24. Then they stop the Giants. They get the ball back. And Michael Vick does it again. Couple great scrambles in that last drive. And hit Jeremy Maclin 13 yards out to tie the score at 31. Improbable. And then the most improbable thing happened. Matt Dodge, who did not, and for whatever reason could not, get the ball out of bounds and away from DeSean Jackson, kicked it to DeSean Jackson. He bobbled the ball, put it on the ground, picked it up, gathered himself, and he went on to do what DeSean Jackson tends to do. And let's go race down the field and ultimately into the end zone and ultimately an Eagles victory, 65 yards out and an Eagles 38-31 victory. It was a walk-off punt return. It was a punt return that it was the first time it's ever happened in NFL history that a game has ended that way. And with no time left, DeSean Jackson did it again and filled off the Eagles, found a way out of no way to get the job done and ultimately.
Now it sounds like
Giants,
Paul,
and ultimately
it sounds
have
like
a grip on the NFC East lead.
Sounds like you're hating though. It sounds like you were blaming this on the punter, Dodge. And, I mean, you said he couldn't for whatever reason kick it out of bounds. I didn't hear you talk about the other 10 players in the field who happened, by
the
way,
the other 10
did
players,
not make a tackle.
Obviously, the other 10 players are culpable for not doing what they need to do and for not stopping Deshaun Jackson. But, hey, it starts with the punter. His job, as Tom Coughlin told him, and if you can read lips, he said, what did I tell you? What did I tell you? And Matt Dodge.
So,
really,
Paul, you felt like that was appropriate? You were on board with that
scene?
I'm not
saying it wasn't appropriate. It was appropriate. It was definitely not appropriate because everybody on that field was culpable for what happened. Everybody on that field was culpable for what happened. But, again, Matt Dodge was told to do a job, and if Matt Dodge did his job, then those other 10 players would not have been culpable, and Matt Dodge would have just did what he had to do, and everything would have been fine. The Giants would have went into overtime. And the way that the Giants were moving the ball in that Eagles defense, you figured they had an opportunity. But when you look at this game, I mean, this was an amazing football game. 31-10, 24-3 at halftime, 31-10 in the fourth quarter, and you figured at that point, this one is over. And then even before that, let's go to that challenge, or lack thereof, by Andy Reid on the Deshaun Jackson catch and run. And ultimately, he fell to the ground. He was touched, as replay showed us. But it was ruled a fumble on the field. Andy Reid did not challenge. And obviously, if he would have challenged, the call would have been reversed, and the Eagles would have got the ball back. But he didn't challenge, and the call was not reversed, and the Giants went on to score, and ultimately they took the lead and were up 31-10. At that point, you figured, you know what, Andy Reid is going to be ripped, shredded for not challenging that play. He's going to be ripped, shredded, and everything for not challenging that play. But Michael Vick, Riley Cooper, David Akers, Charlie Maclin, and those boys saved the day for him. And ultimately, Matt Dodge saved the day as well. And ultimately, the Eagles went on to win 38-31.
Whoa. Slow down. I mean, first of all, let's talk about the fact that the Eagles' defense, again, I mean, it's inexcusable. Let's talk about the fact that, I mean, I have big problems with this game. You're having a great time with it, but I think, like, you didn't look at this and say they deserve to lose this game. They got lucky on a Giants team that has their number.
Well, no, the Giants team does not have a number because if you looked at it, the Eagles they won 5 in a row, now 6 in a row against the Giants. So the Giants didn't have their number. But I look at it this way. In my opinion, if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, I hope I don't see the Giants again. Because it's evident that they have something in place that helps them to limit Mike Vick. They don't completely stop the guy. You can argue that they really didn't stop the guy because they stopped him for 3.5 quarters. But once they got to money time, Michael Vick did what Michael Vick has done throughout this whole year, and that's make plays and make things happen and ultimately get the Eagles a victory. But if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, the way this Giants defense plays against Michael Vick and also the way the Giants offense matches up against the Eagles defense, and Eli Manning had a great day, but I'll give the Eagles defense credit here. They did shut down that run game with the Giants. But I'll say this. I will say this. With all that being said, I will say this. If I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, I do not want to see this Giants team again and hope that I don't have to see this Giants team again. Even though they swept them, I don't want to see this team again.
Well, no. I mean, I'm glad at least, Paul, you're willing to admit that.
Definitely. I do not want to see them again, and I don't think many Eagles fans want to see them again. But we're now being joined by former Eagles offensive lineman Trey Thomas. Trey, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Not bad, Trey. Trey, let's just get your initial reaction. What was your initial reaction after that Eagles-Giants game and that great comeback?
I just couldn't believe that they made such a great comeback, you know, and they did a lot of scoring right there in the fourth quarter. But it was just great to see, you know, that they persevered and, you know, and just put their game together and stuck together and was able to put points up like that at the end. And then with DeSean Jackson with that punt return, it doesn't matter how many times I've seen it, you know, I still watch it like I'm watching it the first time.
Yeah. I do the same thing, actually watched it yesterday on the NFL Network.
Yeah.
Hey, I got it. We got it. I mean, this is, I guess, the biggest question. And you played with Donovan McNabb. I mean, and you played against Michael Vick. Compare and contrast the Donovan McNabb of your era, the Michael Vick of your era, and the Michael Vick that you see on the field today.
Well, you know, the Michael Vick of my era, you know, he was just he was a playmaker. You know, he had to run the ball the whole time. But they passed it off to Warwick a couple of times and hit Crumpler at the tight end. Other than that, you really didn't have it. He didn't have the complete game like he had like he has now. With Donovan McNabb, you know, he kind of reminds me of how Donovan McNabb used to be when he used to scramble a lot. But, you know, Michael Vick just seems like he has just an extra gear and he has a more accurate pass.
And talk about Michael Vick in that fourth quarter. I mean, Trey, he led three big drives down the stretch there, including a big throw to Brent Celek. But talk about how great he was in that last 7.5 minutes.
Yeah, he showed up real big. The whole team really showed up real big in that last quarter. The first three quarters was very sloppy football. You know, I think that they just really – the first half, you know, if they wouldn't have got the roughing call on him, they probably wouldn't have gotten the 3 points in that to get the field goal. But, you know, after that, you know, there were a lot of balls on the ground, a lot of tip passes. So, you know, they really just turned on their game in the third and fourth quarter when he got the chance to hit Macklin, and then it just took off from there.
And talk about how much – and watching Michael Vick before, now watching Michael Vick now, talk about how much Andy Reid has really helped out his game.
I think they've helped out a lot by just making him more accountable as an athlete. You know, it just seems like, you know, I don't know what his situation was in Atlanta, but it just seems like here when you have the number of weapons that he has on this offense, you know, he's able to spread the ball around a lot more. You know, and I think, you know, he didn't have those options in Atlanta. And then, you know, he was just a young player, so, you know, he was just – he may have been doing some things that wasn't always on the up and up. But, you know, I think this year he's just grown as an athlete and just is playing and preparing on a whole other level, on the professional level that everyone thought he could play.
And another former player you play with, Terrell Owens, on his show, you know, mentions the fact that a lot of people, there is a misconception about Andy Reid, about how intelligent of a coach he is and you know, how, his ability to raise his game. Is Andy Reid among active coaches, is he underrated? I mean, do people really know his genius?
I don't think so, and I think he is underrated because he just doesn't have the rings like a Belichick or someone else, you know. So, you know, when he gets those titles, then he'll get the recognition that he deserves. But he's always put us in position to win. You know, even when we didn't have the weapons that we have now, you know, we still made it to the playoffs and still made it deep into the playoffs. So I think as a coach, he's definitely putting his players in the best position to be successful.
It just seems like, you know, it seems like, Trey, that the Eagles teams, even, I mean, your era of Eagles teams, Andy Reid has been able to be very successful with his model and produce, you know, whatever is needed to win on an offensive side of ball where defensively they've had very good units. This is a year where maybe they didn't, but he's been able to get the most out of every player on the field.
Uh-huh. And, you know, and I think what really helps Coach Reid out, and just being from – coming from this organization and then going to a different organization, you could just really see the structure that we have here in Philadelphia, the practice with purpose that we did here in Philadelphia, the extra time that the coaches put into the game plan. You know, there was never a time when we went out on the field and had a question on anything. You know, our coaches prepared us very well, even if, you know, just going to different organizations, you could tell, like, sometimes it's, they practice just to practice. It's not a practice with purpose, you know. And that's one of the things that I feel has been very successful with Coach Reed.
And speaking of Andy Reed, I could have to throw criticism at him. He didn't challenge the DeSean Jackson fumble, a play that, if you look at the replay, obviously should have been reversed and would have been reversed. But when you saw that he didn't challenge that play, what was your reaction to that situation?
You know, I don't know. Coach Reed has always had a problem with challenging plays. So,
right.
You know, yeah, but I think it's the people that's upstairs because he's looking at it on the field level, so it may look a little different. So he's depending on his people that's up in the booth to give him that information, so it can't always be on him.
And I want to go to the defense for a second. And they didn't have one of their better games on Sunday. I mean, they did stop the run fairly well in that particular game. But Eli Manning had a pretty good ball game, 4 touchdowns. And they also recently, they lost Nate Allen in that game. With the Eagles defense, should that, or will that be a concern as we progress throughout the season and into the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, you hate to see to lose a player like that, but like Nate. But that's when other guys are just going to have to continue to step up, you know. Everybody thought that the young Jamar Chaney was going to go out there and struggle. He went out and had a great game, 16 tackles, 12 solos, you know. So that's when you're going to have some young guys going to have to step up and fill in.
How much are they going to miss a player like Stuart Bradley?
Well, like I said, like Chaney came out and had a great game. And, you know, you don't ever want to see someone go down. But, you know, I think that if the guys just continue to rally and just make plays, they'll be okay.
We're talking to former Eagles offensive lineman Trey Thomas. Trey's reacting to the big game that happened Sunday afternoon, Giants-Eagles. Now, Trey, I want to go to Tom Coughlin for a second now. How much blame does he get for this particular Eagle comeback?
I mean, all he could do is make the calls. I mean, I think that our defense, they tighten up in the last quarter, you know, and just the special teams, you know, making a play like that, and then there you go. Game is over with. I think that's real tough for the organization to lose a game like that.
Right.
But,
well,
I mean, I think that rides on everybody's shoulders.
What about his behavior at the end of the game there? I mean, I know it's emotional, Trey, but on a TV, when it's New York and the kicker obviously makes a mistake like that, but as a player, how do you take that?
I don't know. I've never been in that situation. You know, I guess that would be extremely embarrassing. I've never been chewed out by the coach before the play was over with, you know, and just, you know, chewed out like that, you know. But I guess it would be embarrassing. But you put the team in a situation where all you had to do is kick, even though it was a high snap, you know, kick the ball out of bounds, don't punt it back there to him, especially when you have a dangerous returner like DeSean Jackson. So, you know,
right.
Coaches are definitely, you know, they're emotional guys, and he's an old-school coach, so he's going to let you know right away how he's feeling.
And, Trey, you played with the electric DeSean Jackson. I mean, you know firsthand how great and how fast and the playmaking ability that this guy has. Talk about the confidence that the players have in his ability to make big plays.
You know, if you give him a chance, he can do something. You know, it's been so good to just see him just explode into the player that he is now. You know, just seeing him when he came in as a rookie, real cocky, and he just came out and made big plays for us. And he's just continued to just get better. You know, and it is just so fun to see some of the explosive plays that he puts together. He's going to have a heck of a highlight reel over his career.
He definitely will. Definitely will. Now, if you're an Eagles fan, I mean, you beat the Giants twice this year, but at the same time, those were some very tough football games. Would you want to see the Giants again if you're an Eagles fan?
Doesn't matter. You know, I think they could have. This game shouldn't have gone the way it did, you know, because it was just a sloppy offensive performance in the first half. So, you know, I think if you tighten these things up, you'll definitely have a better showing, you know. there were a couple of breakdowns that I just noticed where, you know, just on the offensive side, that could have just been that's easily corrected. And, you know, guys just go out and just make plays. I think that, you know, it definitely didn't have to go into the fourth quarter. The score would have been a lot different if guys would have just stepped up their game, but they got it in the fourth quarter. You know, as long as you get a win, that's good. But I don't think that I think they have a good recipe for, you know, even though you have to battle you've been having to battle against New York, you still came out with a win.
And right now the Eagles are 10-4. They're third in the NFC and on top of the NFC East. The Bears have the Jets and the Packers to end the season, while the Eagles have two winnable games against the Vikings and the Cowboys. At the end of the day, Trey, do you think the Eagles will get that bye in the playoffs?
I hope they do. I really hope they do to get everybody healthy and keep it. Sometimes the bye week can kind of throw you off a little bit because it kicks you out your rhythm. But I think Coach Reed will do a good job with keeping everybody into it and fired up and ready to go. But I hope they do get that second seed. That'll be great.
If they get that second seed, the NFC right now is very wide open. I mean, Atlanta's a top team, but the Eagles beat them, and that's not a team that I'm really scared of. But you have the Falcons, you have the Bears, the Giants, the Saints and the Eagles right now. Five teams right now who, if the season ended today, would be in the playoffs. It's pretty wide open. But how do you rate the Eagles' chances in the playoffs and ultimately their chances to get to the Super Bowl?
I like their chances because really there's no one out there that can really see this team right now. When this team is playing on all cylinders, there's no one out there that can see this team. I don't think, Atlanta is doing well. I don't think Atlanta will be a problem. You know, they haven't played New Orleans this year, but, you know, I don't really see anyone that's in the NFC that's going to give them any problems. I mean, you know, they're putting up points whenever they want to. And whenever they want to make big plays, they're making big plays. And Shady is just doing an excellent job running the ball. Michael Vick had 130 yards rushing, you know. The only thing that concerns me with Michael Vick, he takes a lot of hits.
That's my concern.
Yeah, that is my concern. I think that's everybody's concern. He takes so many hits. There were times when they were hitting him out on the sideline that it was just like, man, you know, I was surprised that he got up and, you know, kept pushing. But it was just, you know, they correct this and just continue to just press the way they're pressing. I don't think there's anyone out there that can really see them in the NFC. You know, Chicago had a good game plan against them, but you know, other than that, I don't think anyone is going to be able to touch them.
That defense of the concern you try?
I think our defense is going to be all right. They've been doing a lot better job with stopping the run. We need to get back to getting at the quarterback.
I'm surprised if you say that, Trey, because I mean they've had so many injuries on the, you know, with the linebacking core and the defensive backcourt. Is this defense in the playoffs? Is it deep enough right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. We shall see. Because now that you're thin in your linebackers, now you're going to have to really rely on your defensive front to get out there and plug these holes up.
Right.
Yeah. What happens though in the locker room? I mean, you were on the teams that went to the Super Bowl, the NFC Championship year after year after year. And you guys faced all the adversity. What happens in the locker room when a guy like Stuart Bradley goes down and Asante Samuels isn't there for three games? Who are the players that are going to pick up this team?
You can always rely on your vets. You know, you're going to always rely on the guys that are there and that are healthy and ready to go. And you know, and just the guys that are injured, just try to get your guys up to speed. That's going to be filling in for you, just to give them some pointers here and there. Just so that they could play at the level that you would. You just give them a couple pointers, get them right. But you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this defense holds up. I think that you know we're going to get Trent back out there to start getting after that quarterback. We got Derrick Burgess that just came back to help out with the defensive end situation. So I think our defensive front is really going to have to step up for us to continue to press forward.
Now, Trey, I want to go back to 2003 for a second. You were part of a similar situation with Brian Westbrook, who returned a punt 84 yards against the Giants to win that game. Talk about you've seen something like this on some level. Talk about your emotion in that particular game and when you saw Brian Westbrook return that punt.
You know what? I don't even remember that game. I really don't.
I really don't remember games like that.
I just I think they all just mix on in. I mean, they're all in there together. But you know, I need to go YouTube and watch it again. You know, to try to see what it is, because I don't even remember. I remember seeing a picture of him running by someone, and it was a great shot. But I really don't remember exactly how it all played out.
I mean it's interesting that you are able to say it, that everything meshes together. Offensive linemen to play as long as you did at the level that you did. What goes into your preparation day in, day out, season in, season out, off season in, off season out?
Pretty much a regular season for me was, you know, like once the season was over with, when we played our last game, whenever if it was deep in the playoffs, I would take 2 weeks off and then I would get right back into my training. And I would always stay up here year round, you know, because I would try to get in with Juan as much as possible. And then, you know, you get through training camp and then it's always week to week. So once we get into the season, it's all about studying the next guy. So once we get done with Sunday, I'm getting ready for the next guy that I have to face and forgetting about last week. So if I had a great game last week, you got to forget about that and get ready for the next game, you know, and just start over from scratch. So, you know, that's how I just had to keep looking forward. I didn't have the time to just kind of just sit back and like, wow, that was a great week last week. Okay, got to get ready for the next one.
And now, Trey, I want to talk about one of your former teammates, Donovan McNabb, who has been benched the rest of the season by Mike Shanahan in Washington. If you look at the situation, Donovan came out the other day saying that he felt disrespected. Well, what are your thoughts on this whole situation with McNabb and Shanahan?
I don't know. You know what? It's sometimes when you go to a different organization, you kind of see – like how well that the other organization took care of you, you know, and I don't know, you know, and it's just tough that it's all panned out like that. Sometimes you think that the grass is green on the other side, and then you get out there and you're like, oh, wait a minute now, you know, it's a little different, you know, and, you know, they may not cover you the same as you were when you were here. You know, because you're in a different organization, a different city, they have no ties to you. You know, so they're kind of like, look, okay, you're not doing what we need you to do. Then they put you out there like that.
And Trey, one of the things, you know, Paul and I go back and forth when you listen to the show. Paul, he has orders to stay far away from Donovan. He's very involved in Donovan's off season, and he wanted Donovan to stay here. My point was. And it's, I've always said, this is a business. I mean, you guys are businessmen. And unfortunately, whether it was public or private, what Shanahan did was what he felt in the best interest of that team. And to say that it was unprofessional or it hurt, you know, Donovan's legacy, I mean, you at the end of the day, better than anyone understand, you know, you can serve 10, 12 years for one organization, but in with the new and out with the old.
And that's the name of the game. You know, and you can't get emotional by, you know, based off of what the teams do. They're operating this team as a business. This isn't high school football, Pop Warner, where, you know, this is all about the dollar and about getting production at the lowest cost or even just getting production.
Talk to them, Trey.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's all about getting as much. It's a business, you know. And if they can get the same production for a cheaper amount, then they're gonna go with that, you know. And I think McNabb just had a rough season, you know. And I mean, I just looked at some of his stats, and he struggled. He struggled bad this year, but you know. And then they just signed him to this deal where they can just write him a check and tell him thank you, you know. So. I don't know. That's the nature of this business.
Do you think Donovan still has some good football left in him?
Well, we shall see. You know, he started off on fire. You know?
Right.
He went out to Washington and was like, oh, it's so great to finally have some protectors out there for me, you know? And then it just, I don't know, things just didn't pan out right.
And my thing with that whole situation in Washington, I mean, Donovan's weapons are kind of non-existent. Really doesn't have a lot of weapons here. And when he was in Philadelphia, his last year at least, he had a lot of weapons at his disposal. But going to Washington, it's not the same type of weapon.
No.
And to me, in my opinion, that is one of the reasons he has struggled. You're as good as the others around you on some level.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Well, you had a solid running back, you had a solid tight end, a solid receiver. I mean, I don't know. You know, now, of course, here you have two great tight end, I mean, receivers, and, you know, you got a couple more options, but, you know, it's still pretty much, I mean, that's pretty much the basis on every team. You got a solid receiver, solid tight end, good running back. Now, it's you the quarterback. Make it work.
And Trey, you were a guy who signed with the Chargers, and it seemed like you abruptly retired. What happened there?
Man, I went out there. I had to have knee surgery during training camp, and I fought to get back out there on the field, and you know, and I had a situation where my knee is pretty much bone on bone on the outside, and you know, I fought to get back out on the field, did all the rehabbing and stuff, probably got back probably a week early, and got out there in the training camp and started practicing. One of the rookie running backs ran into my back, and I'm coming fresh off knee surgery. One of the rookies run into my butt and make my back lock up. My back is all jammed up. My knee is still puffed up. And I'm like, you know what? It's time. You know, I don't want to be one of those guys that's just when you look at me and they're like, man, you know what? He probably should have hung that up last year. You know, you're out there just really limping around. And, you know, because to me, the game has always been more than just a check. You know, as a veteran, I could have, assure you, I could have milked it, made it through training camp, and then they would have had to pay me for the full year. But I didn't want to do that. I have too much respect for this game to just sit up there and just milk it and know that I'm not 100%. You know, because if I have to go, then I'm going to end up hurting the team more than helping. So I just told the coach, like, look, you know, it's time for me to go. I just can't physically push myself through this anymore.
And was that a painful decision, or was it kind of an easy decision?
You know, it was tough. You know, I went back and forth and just talked with my wife and just really made sure that it was the right decision to make. And, you know, right now I feel like it really was the right decision for me to make because, you know, your body just can only take so much. And, you know, to try to push myself through another season with my knee and back the way it was, you know, it just didn't. You know, the bad outweighed the good, you know. And it just wasn't the same. You know, ever since I left Philly, I just, I don't know, just a little something just kept getting chipped away.
And it seems like, Trey, I mean, it seems like Andy Reid sometimes knows when to pull the plug on certain players. And they have a great skill in this Eagle organization. They just know when it's time. And to talk to that, I mean, how do players feel about that?
Hey, you know, like you can't get emotional about it if they feel like, you know, that you can't go. And if you really feel like you can continue to push, like you have a Brian Dawkins that's out in Denver that's still playing at a good level, you know. So
right.
It depends, you know, it depends on the player and just how he feels, you know. But I just know that for me, you know, I probably could have played a couple more years if I would have stayed here in Philly because it was just something about playing here in this city and just being around these fans, it made you push through certain things and you just, mm-hmm. certain things just didn't bother you the same. It's like when I got away from it, it just, you know, it was just a little different. Things started hurting a little bit more, you know.
But Trey, you sound like, though, that one of the athletes in rare fashion who also seemed to be very much at peace with the, and I'll use the term career choice that you made, the reality of your profession, that you're not, you don't kind of close your eyes to the fact that you're highly paid for a very finite amount of time, and you spoke about how you took 2 weeks off. You made it your business to succeed instead of making excuses for your failures.
Yeah, and I just wanted to push myself as much as possible. We always stayed there. I was always had my workout clause. Stayed here, trained year-round, and just made sure I was a fixture here in the city. And, and the city has always taken care of me, and I've just always loved being here. And it's just been a great run, and that's why I was like, you know what, it's time. You know, it's just time to go back home. Go back home. You know, even though I'm originally from Florida, you know, I consider myself a tri-state area, you know, resident.
You're a Delaware Valley guy, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, Trey, what's going on with you now?
Well, right now, you know, I do Comcast shows on Friday. I do the Daily News Live thing, and then I do the pregame shows with Comcast a couple times. I work with the Eagles Network with Spadaro for the home postgame shows on the Eagles Network. And then this off season, I'm going to start doing my offensive line technique training. You know, I worked with playing on the WAN for 11 years, and he taught me so much that, you know, I really have a passion for teaching offensive line technique. So there's a camp called All-Star Sports Camp that's down in, right down in my hometown area in DeLand, Florida, that does, like, combine training where athletes come to get prepared for the combine. So I'm going to go down there and start working with them and teaching their offensive linemen, any offensive lineman that's coming down there for combine training, start teaching, doing technique work with them. And also I'm going to start working with high school athletes. They'll come in where I do, like, private sessions with them just for the months of January through July, and then come back up here, you know, during the football seasons, and be here and be in the media area and do the media thing up here and just bounce back and forth.
And where can we find out information about Trey Thomas and any of his new endeavors?
Well, I'm going to, you know what, I just got this, you know, I don't do websites and stuff. I'm trying to get up to speed, you know. But, you know, I'm old school, you know, I just send an email out. But you know what, I just get logged on to this, schoolofthelegends.com. Yeah, schoolofthelegends.com, where, you know, I just put a page on, and I'm going to start putting posting instruction videos on there. And it has some action shots of, you know, when I played, and just different stuff on there. It's kind of like a Facebook for ex-players. So I just posted a site there where, you know, we're just going to start posting stuff on there and just keeping everybody up on what's going on.
And maybe our boy King Dunlap can take a look at that and improve a little bit on his game.
Hey, you know what? King has been getting a little better. I mean, it's tough. It is very tough to go from left side to right side. It's very tough being playing left tackle to right tackle. It's totally different. So, you know, I think he's been doing pretty, because I, you know, that in Jacksonville they tried to get me to switch over to right tackle, and I couldn't do it.
Okay.
I had been in the left stance for so long, you know, even when I'm just standing around, I put my left foot back.
Trey, it was a lot of fun talking to you. Definitely wish you nothing but the best of luck, man. We definitely would love to have you back as the season progresses and as we go into the playoffs.
All right, appreciate it. Y'all take care.
Take care.
Take care, Trey.
Right. Have a good Merry Christmas.
You too. Happy
All right.
Holidays. Trey Thomas, former Eagles offensive lineman. Trey now does work for Comcast and also does work for Eagles.com and the Philadelphia Eagles. Definitely great to talk to Trey and get his insight on this season. If you have anything to talk about in terms of this last week's Eagle game, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. And you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. It was definitely great and interesting to get Trey's insight on what happened this past week in that Eagle game. I mean, people are going to be talking about that one for a very, very long time, and I can't stop watching it. I mean, I DVR'd the game, and I can't stop watching it. I mean, it was that amazing. It was that amazing of a comeback. It was that amazing of a football game. And it was just great. It was just great, great football.
Look, it was a great win. It was a great win, but let's keep it real. like I said, and I mean this, and I think I commend Trey, you know, for his certainly his loyalty to this organization and the fact that he's certainly a positive guy. But this defense is in my opinion is in trouble. For the offense, I think you saw in this game, and I'm a now big time believer in this offense and how it runs. But this defense, Paul, is putting up too many points.
Well, they are definitely allowing people to put up some points, and you got to give the defense credit here. They did just shut down that Giant run game. They shut it down, and I give them a lot of credit for that. And they didn't play well. I mean, Demetri Patterson didn't have one of his better football games, and they did play well for essentially 3.5 quarters. But that fourth quarter, they really did what they had to do, and they held, and they definitely made plays when they had to make plays, and ultimately, that was one of the reasons that the Eagles were able to come back. In order for you to make a comeback, you got to start stopping them on the defensive side of the football. And the Eagles did that. Defense did that. They stopped them. They started making plays on that side of the football. And ultimately, it helped them win the game. It ultimately helped them to have the lead in the NFC East. My concern now is you have the rookie, Chaney, who was in there to play well, as Trey pointed out. But he is a rookie. And at some point, he may make a rookie mistake. Also, you have Nate Allen, who's missing, who's also gone. And so the secondary is, right now you're missing two pieces to that secondary that was a part of your team at the beginning of the year, and that was Hobbs and now Nate Allen. So you're missing pieces there, and you're missing Duke Bradley, who was a big piece and a big guy in that for that Eagles defense. And also now Brandon Graham is also out, who tore his ACL a few weeks back. So they did re-sign Derek Burgess, former Eagle, some time ago. But they re-signed him. We'll see how much football he has left in him. But, I mean, so they're losing guys on the defensive side of the football. At some point, injuries will catch up to you. But I will say this. I will give the defense a lot of credit for what they did in that second half. And they also have to work on that red zone. They're last in the league in red zone defense. When a team gets into the red zone against the Philadelphia Eagles, more often than not, you're scoring points. And so that's something they definitely have to work on. And something, but at the same time, I say that and say that the Eagles do have some flaws on the defense. But if I look at every team that right now, in terms of, if I look at every team that's in the playoffs right now, if I look at every single team, every team has a flaw. The Falcons, their secondary and their defense is not something that I'm really too high on. The Bears, Jay Cutler, he's an interception. He's a train wreck sometimes. The Eagles, of course, with their defense. The Saints, again, get them outside of that dome, and they're a different team, and their defense is not the greatest. And the New York Giants, Eli, the turnover rate waiting to happen. And so if I look at all in the Packers right now, because the Packers and the Giants are jostling for position. But you look at the Packers also, Aaron Rodgers just coming back from a concussion. But their offense hasn't been great throughout the season. Their defense has been okay. But, I mean, it's a team that they're all beatable. Every team has flaws. There is no team in today's NFL that does not have a flaw. They all have flaws. Every team in this league has flaws, no matter how good you are. Look at the New England Patriots. The team record-wise is the best in football. There are a lot of flaws there. There are a lot of flaws there, especially on that defensive side of the football. So I'm saying
Paul,
that is to say that
team
has flaws.
You're going on and on and on like the excuse wheel. You are. That's what you do, Paul. Your job is to make excuses. I'm sorry, and I said it with Trey, and I'm going to stand by this. This team on defense is way too thin. You talk the Patriots up like, again, Paul, when you love a team, you sing songs about them. And the Patriots, I'm sorry, the Patriots will score 40, 50 points on that defense.
I'm not going to go say that.
Paul, their defense I think the Giants' offense is ultra, ultra predictable. And the Giants scored.
Let me stop you for a second. You look at those Giants receivers and Nicks and Manningham, there's some playmakers there. And Kevin Boss is a playmaker. And, of course, you got that run game with Ahmad Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs. So, in my mind, there are a lot of playmakers there on the Giants offensive side of football. And that's the team, I mean, I understand what Trey is saying, that the Eagles, he believes that the Eagles would not have a problem with the Giants. My opinion is the Giants are a team that is a very dangerous football team in terms of matching up with the Eagles because of that defensive line and because of their run game. But I still say this, and I made this point just a few seconds ago, that everybody has flaws at the end of the day. And you say the Patriots offense could score 50 points against the Eagles. I think the Eagles could score 60 points against the Patriots, 55 points against the Patriots, 51.
Well, I grant you that. After what we saw, I can tell you that the offense, the only problem I have with this offense lately in the last couple of games is, as I said to you, Paul, I think teams in the NFL are now getting used to Michael Vick and used to his speed. But you can certainly see, though, I mean, the runs that he had on the last two drives were phenomenal. He still has that ability to really to burn you. And, I mean, he's throwing the ball very well. The offense just, I think, needs to be a little bit more four-quarter consistent. But it does, to me, seem like they know when they need to score, they won't be stopped. I see them, much like the Rams teams that were able, their offense was just able to put up phenomenal points. I'm just concerned because I think there are formidable opponents. I think Atlanta is a better team than I think a lot of people are giving them credit for from an NFC standpoint. And I'm still going to tell you that the New York Jets are going to surprise people, and that defense is going to be tough.
That's the AFC. Let's focus on in terms of the NFC. In order to get to the AFC team, you got to get out of the NFC. And if you want to talk Jets, I'm still not sold on Mark Sanchez, and I've said it throughout this whole year. Mark Sanchez is not a guy who, at this stage of his career, is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. And I just don't see him getting it done for the New York Jets. I don't see it. I don't think it'll happen. Not this year. But I think defensively they're good enough to win a championship, offensively with the quarterback situation. And quarterbacks win championships just as well as defense, but quarterbacks win championships too. And the way I look at that and the way I look at Mark Sanchez, he's just not good enough. And it's just not good enough. And I don't see him leading the New York Jets to a Super Bowl. I don't see it. You may see it. I don't. I don't see it at this point. Call me crazy, but I don't see it. But if we look at, like I said before, and I was talking to Trey, like we talked to Trey about, the NFC is very wide open. And you're talking about your Atlanta Falcons now, and that's a team that you're blowing them up right now. But if you look at the Atlanta Falcons right now, and that team, I mean, when they came to Philadelphia, that really was not a close football game. And the Eagles had their way with their defense. So that's, and Kevin Cobb was the one who was doing the damage. So I look at that situation, and I say to myself, I'm not scared of that team. And it's funny, everybody, I've been hearing this talk.
Let me
finish my point here. Could you imagine Michael Vick and the Philadelphia Eagles to travel to Atlanta for the NFC title game, which is a very, very big possibility? That is a very that very well could happen if you look at the way things are shaping up right now. That could happen. And could you imagine that particular football game, Michael Vick heading back to Atlanta to play the Falcons? I mean, that would be crazy. But make your point.
The Atlanta thing would be, that's like a made-for-TV movie. I think we both recognize that. My only thing with Atlanta is the family. They're theoretically in control of their own destiny, so you almost have to give them the respect, that they've earned from an NFC standpoint.
Destiny?
Paul, they're in terms of divisions, go ahead.
It's too early to start talking destiny.
Well, no. When I say destiny, Paul, listen. They have a better record than the Eagles do. Period.
They do. But, I mean,
so they're in control of their destiny from an NFC perspective. So you agree with me? Oh, here we go. Here we go, Paul.
Fine. I'll have home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Great. But can you definitively sit here and tell me here today, December 22nd, 3 days before Christmas, that the Atlanta Falcons are definitively a better football team than the Philadelphia Eagles?
No, that's Paul. That wasn't my. Again, it wasn't my point. You're.
But I mean, there's
something
you're
off on the wrong. It's a good thing that you. It's a good thing you never play cornerback because you certainly would never match up well against Darrelle Revis because you never would do well on your own island because you're out there, man. I'm not saying they're better than the Eagles. What I'm saying is that they controlled their schedule. But when you look at Michael Vick going back there, Paul, listen, you could say it's great. It's made for TV. But you really want to take the chance. If you're a Philadelphia Eagle player, fan, coach, putting that guy in that city is not exactly – there's no guarantees there. I mean, a lot of non-football emotions are going to be a major factor in a football game. Let me finish for a change. Big Mouth from the South. If I'm a football expert, I mean, and let's keep it real, Paul, I told you who was going to win the NBA Finals. I told you who was going to win the Major League Baseball. I'm telling you right now, if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fanatic, you don't want Michael Vick walking down into the Atlanta Superdome just so you can recreate all that, you know, majesty and so we could have Bob Costas talk about it and this one and that one. That's not something I'd want if I'm Andy Reid.
Well, okay, it's not the Atlanta Superdome, it's the George Dome. But now that we made that correction.
Correction made.
In my opinion, of course, you don't. If you had the option, you don't even want to play Atlanta in the playoffs because you want to play a team who has a lower seeded team so you can have a home playoff game. Of course. But the next best thing, I think, would be Michael Vick returns to the Georgia Dome to face Matt Ryan and the new face of the old face of the Falcons against the new face of the Falcons. And to me, that would be something that would be interesting. That would be something that would be exciting. And that would be something that would be very entertaining. And it would be something I would really look forward to. Because
you look forward to seeing Michael Vick walk into an environment.
As an Eagle fan, I look at all these teams in the playoffs as we speak. Giants. I look at the Falcons, the Saints. I look at all these teams, the Bears. I look at all these teams. And I tell you right now, I'm not scared. As Bone Crusher would say, I ain't never scared. So if I'm the Eagles, I ain't never scared of any of these teams that are out here right now.
Does it make you feel good to say Bone Crusher, you're never scared?
In my opinion, I think just like I think the Eagles can beat any team in these playoffs, I think any team can beat the Eagles in these playoffs. So what I'm saying is this thing is very wide open. I don't care who has the home field advantage. I don't care. The way I see it, this thing is wide open. This thing is going to be very wide open, and as of now, I couldn't tell you who will go to the Super Bowl in the NFC because it is just that wide open. We're expected to be joined by former Chiefs and former Jets kicker, Nick Lowry. Nick is going to talk about his career and also talk about the situation that happened this past week with Matt Dodge, the punter for the New York Giants. That should be interesting to get Nick's insight on that and see what he has to say on that. situation. And then I'm definitely looking forward to talking to Nick and talking to him about that particular story and that particular situation, because it was very interesting.
Anything's got to beat hearing you talk about your fantasies of Michael Vick playing in Atlanta.
And that is a fantasy, and some fantasies and some dreams happen to
and
come
on that
through.
Note,
and we'll see if it does come through.
We're now being joined by former Kansas City Chiefs and New York Jets kicker Nick Lowry. Nick, how are you?
I am just great. I'm just going through the usual craziness of the couple days before Christmas, but, you know, it's also a time when we figure out just how blessed we are, and I think it's a good challenge. We have to sort out the stuff that matters from the stuff that doesn't.
And we'll try to sort all that out here today. Now, Nick, you were a guy, and this is, I really didn't know this about you, but you were a guy who was cut 8 times before you finally caught on.
Actually, I was cut 11 times by 8 teams.
11 times.
Yeah.
11 times, 8 teams. Okay, we got that curve straight. And
yep.
Throughout that whole time, did you say to yourself, man, after this time, I can't keep doing this eventually. I'm just going to quit.
Well, it was a process of confronting the fears that we all have when we actually say yes to pursuing our dreams, and our dreams are really big. And suddenly we realize we have a chance to not only succeed, but the other side of the coin is we have a chance to fail. Most of the people in life spend their time, you know, the Monday night quarterbacks, the Monday morning quarterbacks, the couch potatoes of the world, if you will, you know, and they don't even really pursue their dreams. And so the hard part is realizing the fear that comes with realizing your dream might not be achieved. And so I had to work through rejection. It was 11 tryouts. I played 2 games with the New England Patriots in 1978, including one when Daryl Stingley was still in the hospital in Oakland, at Oakland. That was my first game ever on Sunday night primetime with Howard Cosell, the late, great Don Meredith, and Frank Gifford. So, you know, that was a process, and I wouldn't trade it for the world, because I realized what the guys in the NFL that you love to watch learn over time if they don't know instinctively, which is nothing of value doesn't come through hard work, and if you stick in there, you can find and dig deep and find parts of you didn't even know you had.
So Nick, but as a kicker, though, how did getting that experience help you on the field? Facing, like you said, and overcoming the rejection.
You know what? The most famous analogy is Thomas Edison and being rejected 10,000 times. All he had to do was succeed one time. And so for me, I had to put myself out there, because unlike the other positions, you know, you get 10 plays, 20 plays, 50, 60, 70 plays. At kicker, you get just a few. And not only that, the average play is about 6 seconds in the NFL. The average field goal from snap to kick is 1.3 seconds. It takes a while to get used to all of the preparation and all of the time that you can literally think yourself out of success. To manage your thoughts and your emotions on the sidelines and manage it then in that moment of truth. And the only way you get to do that is by continually putting yourself out there. Actors, know this all the time, that they get rejected 30 times, or they get successful right until the final 2 or 3, and then they, if you will, get cut too. And so the only way to get used to that kind of pressure, where you have to learn how to focus your energies in an incredibly concentrated way under phenomenal pressure, is by doing
right.
It time in, time out.
And Nick, kind of take us through the process as a kicker. I mean, you're one of the more accurate kickers in NFL history. So take us through the process from snap to kick and how you mentally prepare to make that field goal.
Well, number one, preparation does not start the day of the game. Preparation is what you do all the time. And so the preparation part is applicable to what anybody does on the field or off the field, when they're getting ready for a big moment, they have to prepare every single time that they're weightlifting, they're running, they're stretching, they're kicking, they're doing balance drills, anything that they're doing, they have to think, how does this relate, and visualize what they're trying to achieve and the outcome, successful outcome on the field, so that by the time the game comes, they've rehearsed mentally for the weather conditions, for anything. So they're ready for the unpredictable. It's sort of my belief is it's sort of like a chaos theory, you know, that you've got to expect that things are going to happen you can't predict, like maybe a punt that doesn't go out of bounds and your other 10 guys forget to cover on the punt. And, you know, you've got to rehearse for anything, whether you're the coach and you're Tom Coughlin and you freak out because your punter didn't kick out of bounds, and I know we're going to talk about that, or whether you're the kicker. The kicker, you know, maybe he wasn't ready for a bad snap. Maybe he just wasn't good at kicking out of bounds. But the bottom line is, as the kicker, you've got to prepare 1,000 times in your head before it translates to the physical activities in an actual game. If you've done that homework, then what happens is you feel as much as you can like there are 80,000 people who've come to your own birthday party. And that's what you work towards.
But Nick, you know, I mean, one of the questions I have is, you paint this picture of a kicker in a vast comparison to any other player on the football team. You make a great point. The defensive lineman, there's multiple plays. You know, are they gonna switch? The wide receiver has multiple routes. The quarterback, the guard, a kicker or a punter. A punter has five plays or four plays, left, right, center, or you have a field goal and a kickoff, and if it's left, right, or center, it's so finite for you. It's so much of that visual, knowing you have to see what you're going to do because there's not many alternatives.
Well, it's the interesting combination of what you call kinesthetics, where you visualize in your mind to the point where you literally develop structures in your brain that you feel. Eventually the outcome is you can almost feel the action, the physical action, before you do it. I had a show on Sirius Satellite for 3 years every day called Head Games Radio. If you go to headgamesradio.com, you can see these interviews we had with, you know, Olympic gymnasts that had perfect tens, like Peter Vidmar, saying, you know, you make practice. Of course, Vince Lombardi was maybe the most famous coach this way. You make practice so much like a game that you get to the game, and it's almost fun. It's almost like practice. And right. What happens is when you put that, what I call that level of healthy pressure on yourself as a discipline, it's not unhealthy pressure, which is where you're feeling stress and you're just so anxious all the time, but it is a healthy pressure, then there's a comfort level that's what it's supposed to be. The players that aren't comfortable with that shouldn't be in the game. And Brett Favre is a great example of the best ever, even though it hasn't been his best year by any means. That guy could handle any kind of pressure at any time. And, that's what everybody admires in him, is that it didn't matter if he'd thrown three interceptions. He kept throwing. He didn't let that affect him. And that's the intensity that, unfortunately, in some ways, the kicker doesn't have. But you know what? It is what it is. So you got to deal with the fact that you're only going to have one field goal attempt, at most five or six, sometimes once in a while seven, normally somewhere around two or three, and a few extra points, a few kickoffs. And you've just got to prepare for any kind of situation. So I would watch my successful kicks on film the morning of the game to remind myself that I already was in the groove. And I would literally write in a book, I'd draw hash marks, and before the game and the night before the game and the week of the game, I would visualize field goal right hash, 29 yards, wind left to right. Field goal, 48 wow. yards, left hash, wind in my face. You know, and just visualize it, visualize the field conditions, so that, you know, you're just ready for anything. Then you put yourself in the trusting mindset where you literally say, I've done my homework now. Now it's time to trust it and just let it go. It's when you go on the field thinking you got to be a little too perfect, like the kicker for Boise State, God bless him. You know, he's right. Probably thinking, there's that wind right to left, but I don't know, maybe I should correct more. Instead of trusting him his natural tempo and motion, he tried too hard to adjust. It's easy to say
right.
That is the ultimate pain in life. Trust me, it's the worst thing. I didn't have experienced it too many times, but it's a horrible feeling. And, you know, you only learn by doing it, and you learn literally most by failure.
And it's funny you talked about how failure and how much it affects you and how much it affects the teams. Those few situations that you were in where you did not get that game-winning field goal, what was the emotion there?
I remember one, 44 yards, right hash, into the wind against Buffalo in Kansas City. I woke up 100 times that night dreaming it through, just saying, come on, hook, baby, come on. You know, and so you've got to realize, because you've got to be on your own side at that moment, to be honest with yourself, to learn what you can about it, and then to move on. And that's all you can do. I mean, last time I looked, Joe Montana's career percentage in passing was, 58% maybe, 57%? That means 42, 43% of the time he didn't complete the pass. But he kept putting himself out there, and he had a natural confidence that a Peyton Manning tends to have, that a Tom Brady tends to have, that a Bart Starr tended to have, that a Roger Staubach. Some of those things you just can't learn. There's some people that just have it better than others. But ultimately, whatever position you play, you focus on the things you can control. And you don't worry about the wind. You visualize it. You expect it. That it's going to happen, but ultimately you just control that your preparation is as damn good, forgive the expression, but I mean, that's what you got to do. It's got to be as good as possible. Then you can relax and just literally have faith you've done the best you can and trust that that's enough.
Now, Nick, you're a guy who's a three-time Pro Bowler. You're ninth in the NFL in terms of points, eighth in terms of field goals made. You were nominated to the Hall in 2007. At this point, there are only three kickers in the Hall now. In your opinion, is Nick Lowry a Hall of Famer?
Well, first of all, I was nominated to the Hall in 2008 and 9 as well, in 2010. But thank you. And I was All-Pro seven times. Unfortunately, the Chiefs were not a dominant team in the 80s, and you came to realize that team success, which we had with Marty Schottenheimer, God bless him, team success brought individual success. And, there's really only one pure kicker in the Hall of Fame. The other guys, Lou Groza and George Bland, have played other positions. And that kicker who's in the Hall of Fame is the one that I beat out fair and square, head-to-head, every day in 1980. Clark Hunt, he played seven more years. I beat him out in the prime of his career. And then I broke every one of his records by 10, 20, 30, 40%. Jan Stenerud had eight career game winners. I had 15. So Jan deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. He set a new standard, absolutely. And I'm a little biased here, but I think that the next generation of kickers was led by myself, and then after me, Morten Andersen. And, I took it from career 65%, Jan Stenerud, to 80%, which is, I think, a pretty big jump.
And why is it so difficult for the NFL and the committees to realize your position is no different than the quarterback, it's no different than the wide receiver, that kickers need to be, recognized as, important figures in the NFL?
Well, the game has changed, and kickers are as important or more important than ever. This is where, actually, I was able to go back after my career. I almost played in the 2000 Super Bowl for the Rams, won the tryout. I just thought after that time it was time to move on. And I went back to Harvard, and I studied small groups. One of the things we studied in negotiations with Professor Brian Mandel at the Kennedy School of Government in advanced negotiations was the power of coalitions and the power of small voting groups. In baseball, you've got 500 or whatever voters. In football, you've got 38 grumpy old men and a couple women, and they are in positional trench warfare politics. They're in horse trading politics, and unfortunately, merit is the victim of that, because there's so many players at other positions that also deserve to be in, or certainly serious consideration, that the kicker gets pushed to the back. For instance, Ray Guy, during his prime, was anybody that saw Ray Guy knows he was he set a standard that has maybe never been matched. He unfortunately played about five more years where he didn't punt so well, but he was so fantastic. And there's no punter, there's no pure punter in the Hall of Fame. So I've heard from many people that the not very sophisticated reasoning for the exclusion of kickers is, well, we got to wait till there's a punter, and that's just ass backwards. I mean, that is the way right. You vote is who deserves it. And I'm not Adam Vinatieri. I didn't play for three-time Super Bowl New England Patriots. But Adam started almost 20 years after me. Adam started in 1998. My first year was 1978. So and first year with the Chiefs is 1980. So that's a different generation. And Adam certainly, I think, deserves to be in as well. But it's a load of junk. I mean, it really is. They need to scrap the way they vote and add probably 100 different voters and open up the process, because in reality, anybody that's studied voting groups know that when you have that few people, that merit gets thrown out the window. There are times when the right people are voted in, but all too often it becomes very political, and then you've got a few guys that have, I think, probably some DNA issues with their own masculinity, and somehow they think that kickers threaten their status as men, and that's pretty sad. The kickers who are Hall of Famers are mentally as tough as anybody at any position in any sport. The kickers that Alex Karras used to joke about were the guys that had never played the sport, were soccer players, and that was back in the 60s and early 70s. Get over it, guys. We're way past that. It's 40 years later. The game is very different. You don't make 50% of your field goals anymore. You make 80, 85%.
What would you say to someone that says, okay, you're a kicker, but you only play four or five plays at most a game, so you don't deserve to go into the Hall of Fame? What would you say to that person?
I think what you say is simply that the Hall of Fame is for the best players ever at each position. And right now there are 225 players in the Hall of Fame or people in the Hall of Fame. There's only one pure kicker. So you tell me, does that sound like a right distribution?
Not at all.
So, I think that one kicker or two every 20 years. That's not asking too much.
Now, Nick, you were a great kicker on the field, as we talked about here today. But you've done a lot of off the field work. You've been named NFL Man of the Year numerous times, and you won the Byron Wizard White Award in 1993. What inspires you to serve your community in such a way?
I just love it. I was extremely lucky. I grew up next door to a guy named Byron Wizard White, who led the NFL in rushing all 3 years he played in the NFL, who got the biggest bonus ever by any NFL player from the Rooney family. Then when it was a Rhodes Scholar, close friends with Bobby and John F. Kennedy and their father, when he was a Rhodes Scholar in London, and came back, played pro football, then went on to lead the Kennedy campaign in Colorado and became the deputy attorney general under Bobby Kennedy, and then was a Supreme Court justice for 31 years, a guy that led the marshals into Selma, Alabama, in 1961 and the civil rights marches in 62, and I got to meet this man, this Mount Rushmore of a human being, and he was my next door neighbor, so I was a pretty lucky guy.
And now, Nick, this past week, We saw in the big Giants and the Eagles game, we saw the situation where the punter, Matt Dodge, was asked by Tom Coughlin to punt the ball out of bounds and away from Eagles to Deshaun Jackson. Tell us how difficult that truly is.
Well, it's not that it shouldn't be that hard for a punter, but for a normal person, it is much harder than people realize for a couple reasons. Number one, when you have your blocking schemes for a punter, there's a very narrow angle that you take. If you're not kicking straight down the field and you're kicking at a big angle to the sidelines, suddenly the 3 to 4 feet or 5 at the most that you have when a guy's being pushed by you, by the blocker on the right side if you're kicking right like he was, now that's gone from 5 feet to maybe 2 feet. And now there's a bad snap. Now there's only 1 feet. I mean, there's a possibility of it being blocked. Should he still have kicked it out of bounds? Yeah. But then you have another thing called a spiral. It's very hard to spiral the ball at that angle just out of the blue. Now, should he be able to kick it without the spiral? Yes, I agree. That's exactly what he should have done. But now let's look at the numbers. If the ball was at the 25-yard line, and he kicks the ball just out of bounds, 20 yards. Now they've got the ball on the 45-yard line, and, you know, he can throw it into the end zone. I guess that's probably what he should have done. Given the bad snap, he should have just gone ahead. But
right.
It's just not as easy as people think to spiral a ball out of bounds. That's not saying that he shouldn't. I'm just saying that it's harder than people realize. And anybody that wants to not kick the ball straight out of bounds to your right, you know, where now they've suddenly got the ball on the 20-yard line, you know. You're kicking from your 10, 12, 15-yard line, as far as I know. He was kicking from, like, his 15-yard line. So, you know, so if he kicks the ball just straight right and it's out on the 20, now they got a real shot at throwing the ball in the end zone. That's not what they were asking him to do. They're asking him to kick it out of bounds, probably on the 40, on the far 40, which means when it's out of bounds, you got to kick the ball 5 to 10 yards farther just because the sidelines is farther. And, you know, anybody that tries it, I just think go out there and see how easy it is to do that. So having said that, he should have done it. Now to me, the question is how does the head coach handle it? And I think Tom Coughlin, upon reflection, I think realized the better part of his judgment, but in the moment, he didn't show a lot of class.
No.
But not just that, Nick. I mean, to make and locally, and it's New York, so it certainly gets national appeal. To make the kicker the fall guy when there's 10 other guys who all missed the tackle, to me, it was almost. You know, it was very poor character, poor coach. That's the head coach.
It's the essence of poor coaching, because what you're doing is, and you can see it in New York. I mean, I played for the Jets when we were 1-15. Trust me, you see when the pressure and the negativity, the dark cloud, and the intensity of the media who only want to bark at, you know, the negative stuff, you know, there's a real pressure and temptation to get in the blame game. But the ultimate role model has got to be the head coach. Marty Schottenheimer, God bless him. I always tell people, Marv Levy was a great coach, but he became a greater coach when he went to Buffalo. But he did have the courage to cut Jan Stenner to keep me. But Marty Schottenheimer was the best coach I ever played under. And Marty certainly criticized his players, but he did it in-house. He did it in the meetings. He did it behind closed doors. He did it in a way that showed respect for the player, saying, listen, your preparation or your performance on the field was not appropriate or was not adequate because of X, Y, and Z. You need to address it. And he was, trust me, he was an intimidating figure. And you knew you had to get it done. And that's the only standard that should matter. But to do it on the field, to me, showed a real breakdown in the leadership role of the head coach.
And how would you have handled that situation if you were Matt Dodge and the coach was berating you like that? on national TV and in front of everybody.
I think there's not much you can do. You have to sit there and take it, and it's just sad. But, what happens is if you do that as a coach, now you're suddenly getting into the blame thing, and now the other 10 guys are going, yeah, it was the kicker's fault.
Right.
Well, last time I looked, DeSean Jackson ran through about six guys that were within, 5 feet of him?
Yeah, I mean, it was an amazing play.
And he dropped the ball. So they had more time to break down and get ready. And now, unfortunately, DeSean Jackson and Michael Vick may be the two most difficult to catch, with Jesse Hester as the third, if not the best of all, difficult to catch players in the NFL. But having said that, you can develop a losing mindset, and that to me is what the Giants are going to have to figure out, is clearly a losing outcome for them the rest of the way if they can't, look in the mirror and realize it was their own fault.
And real quickly, Nick, you were a guy who served under three presidents, and your big thing is the youth. You've really done a lot of work with the youth. You worked with Ronald Reagan, George Bush, the first George Bush, and Bill Clinton, excuse me. So you worked with three presidents. Tell us about that.
Well, I'll tell you what. It was most people don't know that in the midst of getting cut by all those teams in 1978 and 79, I was working as a legislative aide in the offseason for Senator John Chafee, and then I got a permanent job working for Senator Bob Packard on the Senate Commerce Committee on aviation deregulation and aviation safety. And I gave up that job to try one last time to make it in the NFL, and then I God bless me with a long career, and I worked hard because I knew how hard it was to make it in the first place. And coming from that experience, it just was so obvious how lucky I was, what a great platform I had. I started to work with kids that had cerebral palsy because my aunt had cerebral palsy and yet became a professional writer with a college degree. And, just start thinking about making the most. I mean, isn't the journey for all of us is making the most of the gifts we've been given, and then starting to think about disability and cerebral palsy as being mirrored by kids that grow up that are physically fine but maybe psychologically grow up in an environment or culture where they aren't supported and nurtured to be the best they can be. And so that's what we do now. We do leadership programs with Native American youth, with youth across the country, not just Natives. We work at Dartmouth College with the brightest youth in the country, or we work at Pine Ridge as we did a couple months ago. If you Google the Rapid City Journal and Nick Lowry, there's a nice article about our work there with the prison youth there, with the Oglala Lakota Sioux, just 30 minutes from the original site of the massacre at Pine Ridge, and the collective depression of those people. But you know what? It still comes back to a very sports-oriented theme, which is if you give kids the same kind of coaching that we were lucky enough, if we had a good coach, to have, which is support, encouragement, direction, structure, discipline, and the environment where hard work would be rewarded with opportunity, and then opportunity was always up to us, hey, that's what anybody, any kid from any country, any language, any culture in the world will respond to that. And that's what's really exciting. I gave a speech to the San Carlos Apache Braves team last October, and they were 0-6. They lost 42-10 and 38-0 the previous 2 weeks. And their friend of mine, Mary Kim Titler, is a former reporter for NBC. Her son, she's from the San Carlos Apache tribe, the only full-blooded Native American reporter of a major market television station in the country for 20 years. And her son, Bear, was the quarterback of the San Carlos Apache 13-, 14-year-old team. So I go up, drive down to Superior, which is about an hour and a half from Phoenix, and I just said to them, listen, the secret I had to learn when I was getting cut by all those teams was all about bringing my focus and my passion to the moment, because don't ever let anybody tell you have ADD. That is a crock. You can bring attention to anything you have passion for, right? And they look at me like, yeah, you're right. I said, that's it. That's the secret. Whether you're in the NFL and you're Brett Favre or Joe Montana or Marcus Allen or Derek Thomas, or whether you're somebody playing on a 13 or 14-year-old team, if you bring all of your passion and all of your focus to the next 2 hours, you will do things you never thought possible. They were ahead 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. They won that game. They won the rest of their football games. Got a call 3 months later from Mary Kim saying, guess what? 16 of the 22 members of that team played on the basketball team. That basketball team did not lose a game the entire season. So,
Wow. Yeah,
it wasn't just me, but it was simply tapping into the internal character and skills of that person that all are focused literally through the ability to concentrate. So, you know, whether you're the kicker in life, you're the quarterback, if you can do that, that's what the great coaches do today. What Bill Belichick does for the New England Patriots is he looks for a smart player, not just because he's going to his little rule book and his little playbook. He's able, his players, like Teddy Bruschi is probably the best example of all, in the moment of the game to remember exactly the strategies going on, what to expect, to get into the mind and heart of the other team and think right now what's the thing that I not only do I have to do for my role, but also what's the most likely thing to happen. So his players are able to ad lib in the moment because they understand, because they have a coach in Bill Belichick who's helped them see that that is the difference between the champions and the losers.
And now, Nick, where can people find information about you and what you're doing today?
Well, thanks for asking. I'll tell you what, it's a real blessing. NickLowry.com, NickLowery.com, or NickLowryFoundation.org. And I do speaking. I gave a speech last week on bullying to West Park Elementary out here. And if you want to Google Nick Lowry and bullying, there's a speech there. And a lot of kids now, whether it's cyberbullying or the classic bullying that we witness from time to time, a lot of parents and teachers, I think, would benefit from seeing that. You know, it's all about letting somebody or not letting somebody take away your own power. So it's great work, NickLowry.com or NickLowryFoundation.org.
Nick, it was a pleasure talking to you, and we definitely wish you nothing but the best of luck, and we would love to have you back definitely down the line to talk some football.
Hey, I really appreciate it. And
great having Nick Lowry. Thank you, Nick Lowry, for coming on. It was great having you on the show. It was great to get your insights, and it was definitely a great interview with Nick Lowry, and we enjoyed him very, very, very much. Got another 3 minutes left in the show. Christmas is upon us. It's coming along about 2 or 3 days away. Time of year you give thanks for all the things that you have and all the things that you've been blessed with. It's been a great year so far for the GoForward family and everything that we experienced on the show. We enjoy week in and week out bringing you some of the best and brightest in the world of sports, and it's a lot of fun. And the year is about to close. We have one more show before the end of the year. That will be next Wednesday, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So don't miss it. But make sure you check us out then. And that will be the final show of the year. We want to thank Trey Thomas along with Nick Lowry for coming on to the show. It was definitely a lot of fun talking to Trey and talking to Nick about some of the things and the happenings in the league. And we talked a lot about the Eagle game, the Eagles-Giants game, and that was a great football game, a memorable game, and a game that people will be talking about for years to come. They will be talking about this game for a long, long time. And it was a great game, and it was a fun game, and it was one of those games and one of those things that you probably will not see again in your lifetime. I mean, that's how incredible of a game it was, and that's how amazing of a football game it was. So it was definitely a great, great game. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, where you can listen to this show and other shows. And again, it's been a great year on blogtalkradio.com/PGAN and for the Go Forward show. And definitely check out this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. And a lot of great shows. So please go there. And also follow me on Twitter at GoForAgain. There you can see what I'm up to. So make sure you follow me on Twitter at GoForAgain. And again, you'll see some of the happenings
of the show. Go for it. And again, make sure you follow me. Follow me. Follow me. Follow me. Twitter.com/goforitcan. Make sure you follow me there. Please follow me. And again, we want to thank Nick Lowry for stopping by. And also, we want to thank former Eagle Trey Thomas for stopping by and giving insight on that great, great, great Eagles-Giants game. Again, you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/begin. And you can follow me on Twitter at GoForItCan. For everybody at GoForIt, for Jeremy S. this is Paul Kent. Have a happy, a healthy, and more importantly, a safe Merry Christmas. And can't wait to see you next week, and the week after that, and the week after that, and the week after that. So we'll see you later. Merry Christmas. Bye.